What you drinking?
I'm drinking a large black coffee.
Damn, that's hard.
Yeah, I'm very different. I read.
Other girls, they buy their frippy, frappy, flappy whatevers from Starbucks. Me, I drink black coffee.
Yeah, they like their skinny, half shot, soy chino with caramel drizzle on top because they can't take a real coffee. Like that Carrie Underwood song. She's like, probably buying her some fruity little drink because she can't shoot a whiskey.
Oh, yeah, Carrie.
I love that song.
I'm drinking a peppermint tea.
So you're a grandma.
It soothes my stomach.
Aw.
And it also is non-caffeinated.
A famous thing about Maya is she can't do caffeine.
Something fucked up about me also is that I do love fruity drinks, but not just fruity. Like, when I get cocktails, I like them kind of like creamy.
We went to a cocktail bar where they make a drink for you on the spot. Like, you tell them what you like and then they like make a fun drink. And Maya was like, I want something creamy. And they were like, oh.
And they said, what does that mean? Like, do you want something with coconut cream in it? And I was like, for sure. And then they were like, or do you want something with heavy cream? And I was like, heavy cream. And they actually looked like repulsed putting it on the table. And it was very good.
Aww.
I just feel like cocktails are like kind of like a dessert for me.
Oh, yeah. No, I like that. I asked for something with grapefruit and I got something with grapefruit and I was very happy.
What's your go-to cocktail?
My go-to cocktail? I don't know. I love a French 77, I think is what they're called. It's like gin and champagne and like lemon.
That's nice.
Yeah. What's yours?
I like to say like a Pisco sour probably, or like a amaretto sour.
Ooh.
I feel like I just, again, like I kind of like them frothy, but they're not that creamy.
Yeah.
A sour. It's funny because we're using new mics today.
Yeah.
And yeah, when I went to rent them, because we are broke ass and we rent our equipment.
Oh yeah, so broke ass.
Well, just a broke ass mindset. But I mainly do it because I like the experience of going and renting from the place that we rent at. It's just a nice, good time.
Yeah.
They're very friendly. But when I went, I was getting the mics and they didn't have the ones we usually get. And then it was like this whole process. I was there for like 45 minutes. And then when they were giving me the mics, they were like, so what do you get the mics for? And I was like, oh, like a podcast. And they were like, oh, so what's your podcast about? And I was like, it's about social media. And all of them just looked at me with this, like, you could see them all kind of like roll their eyes silently. And I was like, okay. It sounds so vapid when I say it out loud.
No, I hate talking about it to people because I'm like, I don't want to.
It's like, you wouldn't get it.
No, it's not even that. It's just like, I don't want people to think I like think that I'm so important that I need to have a podcast to talk about these stuff. But then here we are.
Well, then when I was doing it, he was like, well, let me know how it goes. Like, let me know how your podcast goes. And I was like, it's going pretty well. And then today, even when we got coffee, they were like, what are you doing today? I was like, we're recording a podcast. And they were like, what's today's episode on? And I was like, pick me's.
Like, what?
And yeah, they didn't hear us either, so we had to say it like
pick me's, pick me's.
That leads us to today's topic, which is about
pick me's.
It'll be a more of a fun one, I would say. Who are you, Hannah?
I hate this question.
I know, we need to come up with a new, well, it's really like in North America, we're really like, who are you? And you have to say what your job is. But like, who are you really, Hannah?
I think that I'm a good friend. I'm a silly girl. Tell me who I am.
I think silly girl is apt.
Aww.
No, I'm kidding.
And who are you?
I'm Maya. I'm a little curmudgeon.
Yeah, that's fair too.
Yeah, I'm a little grump. Well, just mainly on these days when there's no sunlight outside.
Yeah, which is so fair.
And this is Rehash, a podcast about the social media phenomenons that strike a nerve in our culture, only to be quickly forgotten, but we think are due for a revisiting. This season is all about internet archetypes and the many, many lives they've lived. If you like our show and want to hear more from us, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/rehashpodcast, where we have monthly bonus episodes, weekly minisodes, and early access to our regular programming. If you don't want to join the Patreon, feel free to rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, because
we love it when you do that.
today's episode, like we said, is about an archetype that the internet loves to hate.
They love to hate this girl.
Like maybe a little too much, I would say.
I would absolutely say too much.
So do you have an idea of where the term pick me like originated from? Or do you like at least where you first heard it?
I first heard it on TikTok. Just basically anytime a girl's like, I'm going to be funny and like do something different. Or any girl who's like, this is my best friend, Justin. And we've been best friends since we were five. And we do sports together. And Justin's now getting married to like this other girl. But I'm still his best friend. And they're all like, you stupid pick me.
That is basically exactly what the vibe is over there. Yeah, that's also where I first heard it. But I just wanted to kind of give a little, we'll just roll it back a little bit.
Yeah, let's roll it back.
Let's roll it back. So like basically every trend on the internet, pick me originated from Black Twitter. It came about in 2016 when the hashtag tweet like a pick me started circulating amongst Black women as a means of criticizing a certain type of woman that they were like observing in their communities. So I pulled a few tweets from the hashtag that are from around 2018. Yeah, mostly I just wanted to look at these because they're pretty funny, but also because I just want to give you a sense of the kind of woman that they're pointing towards, because it's a very clear through line between all the tweets.
Okay.
So I'm going to do a little dramatic reading.
Oh, I love.
Hashtag tweet like a pick me. I don't wake my man up if he goes to sleep in the car. I carry him on my hip into the house because a woman is supposed to be his piece. I prefer staying in and folding clothes while I listen to Beethoven to being in the club twerking to Cardi B. My man would never have to worry about a thing because I'll be ironing his underwear ready for his next appointment. You expect your man to take you shopping and buy you designer clothes? That's why you can't keep a man. I pay for his Gucci belts, tailor his suits, and make my own clothes with the lint from his laundry. That is how you keep a man. My man likes football, so I like football. His team is my team, and I am happy to be with him, even though he's been unemployed for the last 2 years and isn't looking. It's because you can't support your man that you guys are single. I cook for my man, wash his underwear, brush his eyebrows, carry him to bed, and remind him to text back all his hoes while you guys are on Twitter hating on men. And then this one's my favorite one. Females these days don't know how to treat their kings. I anticipate his needs, brush his teeth in the morning, flush his royal toilet, clean his royal penis. My king walks on petals. Y'all basic for letting your king's feet touch the ground.
Okay, so this pick me archetype is very different from the one we're going to be talking about.
Yeah, why do you think it's kind of different? What do you think this woman's like values are? Why do you think it's a bit different from the one that we're used to?
Well, the pick me that they're like illustrating in these tweets is somebody who is very dedicated to a man, is not like other girls. In fact, she's very much adhering to gendered stereotypes, like very traditional gendered like stereotypes being a nurturing girlfriend or wife. The now pick me is a complete departure from this pick me.
I thought the exact same thing when I was reading these, because they all have the exact same tone, and it's all about a woman who's obsessed with her hubby or like her boyfriend or whatever partner. Well,
it's just so interesting too, because there's this repeated trend in a lot of the episodes that we're doing where a word will be used on Black Twitter that has such a specific definition and through its popularization gets distorted and then like rebuilt into this completely different archetype. And it's such a departure.
Yeah, exactly. And also it's funny because this is like a type of woman that was really being observed. And if you look at the hashtag, some of the hashtags are responses to tweets that sound exactly like this, but aren't part of the hashtag. They're just earnest. In the case of Black Twitter's pick me, it's like, this is a woman who's actually disadvantaging herself in favor of men.
Yeah.
Which I don't actually really know if that can be applied to our conception of the pick me.
No. I think both versions, you could say, like, suffer from some sort of internalized misogyny, as I'm sure we'll get into. Mm-hmm. But it's a different way, and it's embodied in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Completely. Those are just different women.
What to you really defines the pick me now, in your like, from what you've seen?
Well, I guess there was that TikTok trend of like, so pick me, choose me. And it's this idea of Taylor Swift, You Belong With Me music video. The girl who's like there sitting off on the sidelines while the guys are going for these like flashy, traditionally feminine women. And they're the ones that are like overlooked, misunderstood, but they have the real love in their hearts for their men.
They know what men want. Other girls don't. Yeah. Kind of vibes. But in a way that's more like they know what men want exteriorly and not in terms of relationships. Like they know I don't think exteriorly is a word. It's kind of like they're appealing to men in a very exterior way rather than in this way where it's like more within a relationship, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I also think that this idea of the dynamic between like the hot girl that all the guys want and then like the quiet, more chill girl that they ignore is such a made up conflict. Like, I think women made up that conflict to deal with their own insecurities, but I actually would say that there are just as many men who are interested in women that aren't hyper feminine. It just depends on the man. The pick me that I understand is very much the female best friend who gets overlooked and the guy has to really like think about it to realize she's been there the whole time.
That is one facet of what the pick me is to me, again, because this term hasn't fully been defined, but then another facet to me is the Carrie Underwood type who can like chill with the boys and drink a beer and kick back, but she's also hot.
But I think that also feeds into the idea of the female best friend, I'm hanging with the guys kind of thing. Again, I think it is an invention of our own minds that men aren't going to be interested in you for liking all the things that men like, I guess.
I don't think anyone knows what a pick me is, and I feel like we'll find out why. So I think this definition by Iman Hariri-Kia for Cosmopolitan kind of encapsulates kind of the duality of the term in the way that it was used by Black Twitter and then in the way that it's used now. Mm-hmm. So she says, it's a lens on the world that prioritizes, centers, and makes ubiquitous a rigid and stereotyped perspective that men's pleasures and interests are paramount, often at the expense of the needs, wants, or even humanity of others. Although the impulse to behave this way can often be due to issues of low self-esteem caused systematically by the patriarchy, pick-me girls can subconsciously contribute to the system instead of working to dismantle it, which I feel like is kind of in line with how Black Twitter is using
it. Yeah, I was going to say.
But then she goes on to say, for example, this can look like criticizing conventional femininity by calling it cringy or basic. Think hating on the girlies who love Taylor Swift or Starbucks seasonal drinks.
Guilty.
Or calling themselves guys girls because women are just, quote, too much drama. In both scenarios, the pick-me girls may be seeking validation from men in order to feel accepted, rewarded, and desired while ragging on other women.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is more in line with the way we talk about it now. Are there any examples of this type of pick-me from popular media that, like, you feel like you saw a lot growing up?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, Avril is sort of, like, the number one example and also my first real exposure to that kind of, you know, juxtaposing this type of girl versus that kind of girl thing. And I idolized Avril as a kid. Like, honestly, all the music I listened to for, like, the first little bit of my life was just Avril. I wanted to be her. I loved her so much.
You couldn't escape it if you were specifically our age, like, that generation.
Yeah.
Or whatever our, like, kind of cusp generation is. That was the Avril generation. And there was no way you wouldn't be a fan of her.
Oh, for sure. And, I mean, I also, like, grew up with my brother and his friends always around playing with older boys on our street. Like, I was constantly trying to be accepted within their spaces. So, like, being into the music they liked, because my brother showed me Avril until she became lame for him. Seeing a girl who was, like, skateboarding with the guys and doing that stuff for me was, like, really cool because I really wanted to be accepted by boys that I was always around. And
in a platonic way? Like, you just wanted to be their friend.
Yeah. I just wanted to be their friend. But, like, that's why I loved the complicated music video. She's not dating any of these guys. She's just rolls up to the skate park and they're like, let's crash the mall. And they're just, like, fucking around.
It's such a funny music video because it is her talking about a relationship, but the whole music video is just her hanging with these guys.
But it's about, like, a relationship where it's like, yeah, you're not being true to you and you're making everything weird, but, like, I just want to chill out.
I'm just trying to chill and go to the mall and run around with my skateboard.
But I love that music video. I loved it so much. And, yeah, I mean, that was, like, my fantasy of being a teenager. So Avril for sure really set up that dynamic for me. And I think especially if you compare her to the other girls at the time, like Britney, who I wasn't really allowed to listen to because of my feminism reasons. And then
that's crazy.
I know. And then Hillary Duff, who, I don't know, there was sort of like, are you a Hillary or are you an Avril girl at some point?
I never had that. I was firmly in the middle of,
and that's
of
awesome,
all of these identities, mainly because, like, yeah, I was mostly surrounded by girls growing up, so it wasn't the same. I feel like there were times growing up where I was an extremely feminine girl. I wasn't good at sports at all, and that was a huge source of insecurity for me. And, like, I played with dolls and I liked fashion, you know, those are things that I really liked. I liked princess movies. But then I also feel like I wanted to be alt as a kid really badly. So, like, I did reject being basic. You know, I really looked down upon signifiers of basicness. Like, I really didn't like Taylor Swift. I looked down on Uggs. I did eventually get a pair. And also, like, I had an older sister growing up who was quite a bit older than me. And, like, in the 90s, like, she also didn't have a lot of female friends. Like, she got pretty badly bullied by girls that she knew. And so she really mainly had male friends and really leaned into these punk and like rock communities because Toronto was like a big hub for that at the time. So she used to like take me to like these concerts growing up.
That's
and stuff.
So cute.
And I kind of like idolized it. So it kind of made me feel like I was more cultured than other girls my age, which is like obviously terrible. But then in the same sense, I was very girly and didn't really like a lot of the things that boys liked.
I mean, yeah, I think there's a duality to all of us. There's also, you know,
we can be multitudes.
Growing up as a girl, like, you are going to have Barbies and pink things and like the Disney Channel and everything like marketed towards you. And so it sort of makes sense that you would take that, even if outside of that realm, like, you had other interests that were a bit more alternative. I mean, you're still a little girl.
But like in the public sphere, I was trying to appeal more to like boys' interests, but in the private sphere, in the comfort of my home, I would play with my little dolls.
I mean, it was just, for me, it was like I was more likely to be around a bunch of boys because we would just play with boys on our street.
Yeah,
right?
It was like circumstantial.
So I would be playing basketball with them or doing Beyblades or Yu-Gi-Oh or whatever.
Okay, I loved Beyblades.
Yeah, awesome. But my Beyblades were pink. Like, you know what I mean? And then I would still go into the comfort of my room and like play with my Barbies. It's a duality, but I was a bit of a tomboy as a kid, mostly because I just, that was the stuff I was surrounded with. We've talked about how, like,
you liked Hercules.
Well, no, it's just we didn't, my mom is like, no, we had all the Princess Disney movies. I'm like, no, we didn't. We had Hercules and we had The Lion King. Those were the ones I remember watching. I don't remember watching the girlier ones until I got a little older and I was at friends' houses.
I don't want to see Animal Hamlet. I want to see Cinderella.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's like, I wouldn't have been against that stuff, but I also think it was sort of like post-feminist time where parents thought it was a progressive thing to keep your kids away from overly gendered toys. And like, maybe that was
not my family.
Oh, okay.
My parents did not care about that.
My parents like had an ethical dilemma about whether they should buy me Barbies
my
or
sister doesn't buy my nieces Barbies, like, yeah. She's very against it, which I've always been like, ugh.
But then it's like, you kind of like, your kid is gonna ask for Barbies if they're being marketed Barbies, and eventually you gotta go, okay. I mean, you don't have to, but that's what
I mean
said.
My Barbies, I did make them get into fights, and I did make them beat each other up. I created a very hostile environment for those, for those dolls. Were there any kind of movies that you remember? Like, of course.
Freaky Friday is a good one. Like, Lindsay is so cool in that. I loved her little band, and they were really like,
hey, that song is a very good song.
And the popular girls in that movie kind of dressed like old ladies to me. They were all wearing like sweaters and stuff, and the girl was just so mean to her in a way that like is not human behavior.
I mean, always these like really cartoonish, yeah, evil, like popular girls.
Lizzie McGuire.
Although Lizzie is quite girly herself, I would say.
Lizzie is girly, but they're spunky. Like, her and Miranda have like their fun little like hairdos, and they hang out with Gordo, and they're spunky.
They make little films.
I don't know what other movies.
I always think of
Cinderella, like, Story.
Yeah, Cinderella Story. I always think of She's the Man. They really love putting these protagonists in these hyper feminine environments. So they plant her within this like debutante environment, and she's like, ugh, I'm just gonna eat really messy and run around and I don't know, wear Converse with my dress. And they pose her against Monique, and they make Monique, you know, incredibly feminine and like horrible.
Yeah.
We did grow up with these very feminine characters being very villainized. There's a few that are kind of teetering the line, though, like Kat Valentine and 10 Things I Hate About You.
I love Kat.
I love her. She's kind of like a second wave feminist.
I guess, but Kat isn't a pick me to me because there's not, none of what she's doing is for the like appeal of men, and quite, it's to repel them.
The other characters aren't that either. I wouldn't say that any of them are actually like outwardly doing things to appeal to men.
Even in 10 Things I Hate About You, her thing with Bianca isn't that she thinks she's like just vapid and superficial. She's like, I just don't think you're doing these things because you want to.
I just
do
think
them.
The way the movie poses her, sure, is because they do make Bianca very vapid.
But also, I would say that like the movie is like often characterized as Kat as this whiny, grouchy like feminist too. Like, it's not like she's so cool either.
No, it's true. It's true. There's also Legally Blonde and Clueless that are kind of like the opposite.
Yeah.
Movies, like, they feel like kind of an exception, but they feel like such an exception when you look back at that time. You're like, Legally Blonde was ahead of its time because it took this slightly less effeminate character in Selma Blair and made her the villain.
Yeah.
And made Reese Witherspoon the protagonist.
And I hated Selma Blair in that movie. She made me so mad.
She's awful. But then she becomes friends with her.
And I love that. But I love Elle Woods. And Legally Blonde was a huge touchstone for me when I saw that movie. I didn't see it till I was in like grade 5 or something. But I became obsessed with that movie. I was obsessed with the musical. I loved it. And I think that was around the age when I became a bit more girly. In grade 6 and 7, I became a bit like more of a girly girl. So
yeah, that makes sense.
I loved that movie. And Clueless is also just one of my favorite movies, but I liked that, like, even when the girls are kind of mean, like, no one's actually that mean and clueless.
They don't pit them against each other, but it's rare that you would see such a feminine protagonist on screen. And yeah, the protagonist is the popular girl. Like, yeah, that's not really common because it's not relatable.
I know, but God, it's a great movie.
I also feel like those YN protagonists, like, you know, like Bella Swan types.
Oh, for sure.
They themselves, I don't think, are actively putting down femininity, but the way that the book kind of presents them in this demure, mousy way where they're kind of naturally beautiful and they don't need to wear makeup and they read a lot and they don't hang out with girls and they don't really get along very well with them, they're posed as this like ideal romantic candidate.
Oh, for sure. And I would also say, like, there actually is sort of like a pitting her against Rosalie and Jessica in the books. Rosalie is like really beautiful and much more feminine, and she doesn't like Bella, and like they just don't really get along at all. And then with Jessica, who Anna Kendrick plays in the movies, she is like the popular girl who befriends Bella because all these like cool kids are trying to like take her into their group. And then as the books go on, I feel like she's meaner and meaner towards Jessica because like Jessica isn't there for her when she becomes a lunatic after Edward leaves and blah blah blah.
I know, they really get you into this frame of mind where you're like, wow, no one will let these two run away together and have this baby that grows up at warp speed.
Yeah,
to be fair, Jessica is kind of bitchy.
Yeah, she is. But it's like even Twilight has that sort of that kind of girl versus me kind of girl. And of course all the guys like Bella, and Jessica's mad about that.
I think any kind of young adult book has that. Since when is the likable character the one who's super feminine?
No, for sure.
Something that's always characterized the pick me, which you kind of, you know, alluded to earlier, is the idea of internalized misogyny. Mm-hmm. Do you want to give the listeners like a little explanation of what you think that means?
Internalized misogyny? Well, I think it just means, you know, you're a woman growing up in this world and you are constantly being exposed to misogynistic ways of thinking and treatment, and you take that inwards. I think that people have sort of started to warp it, so like anytime a woman is misogynistic towards another woman, we call it internalized misogyny, where I think it's more about how you treat yourself.
Interesting.
You know what I mean? Because that's what internalizing means. It's like you hear all these misogynistic ideals and kind of like rules of life or whatever, and you're just taking that in and you're applying it to how you should behave and like how you should see the world.
For me, and I think that really is in line with what I was thinking, is that it comes down to this idea of self-conditioning almost.
Yeah.
So for me, it kind of ties into this concept of psychological oppression, which has been like well documented by a lot of theorists, particularly in post-colonial studies by people like Frantz Fanon and Albert Memmi. But Sandra Lee Barkey was one of the first to use it in reference to women. Okay. Sandra Lee Barkey was like a very prominent feminist philosopher, and she has this essay called On Psychological Oppression from 1979, where she talks about the way women have been culturally conditioned to believe that their own oppression is normal. Mm-hmm. So it's basically a mechanism by which the oppressor conditions the oppressed to carry out their own oppression, whether or not the oppressor is actively there doing it. So like a very literal example in post-colonial theory would be like the idea of British decentralized rule, where they had colonized subjects basically carry out the daily operations of the colonial government.
Okay.
Or like the concept of an Uncle Tom in Black American history, right? Like someone who has internalized their own oppression to the extent that they espouse it outwards, and they also condition themselves within that environment.
Yeah, okay.
So this is, I just want to read a quote from Barkey. She says, "Like economic oppression, psychological oppression is institutionalized and systematic. It serves to make the work of domination easier by breaking the spirit of the dominated and by rendering them incapable of understanding the nature of those agencies responsible for their subjugation. This allows those who benefit from the established order of things to maintain their ascendancy with more appearance of legitimacy and with less recourse to overt acts of violence that they might otherwise require." In a post-colonial sense, it's like you're kind of placating quote, colonized subjects so that they don't revolt against you because they right. believe that they also should be colonized.
Well, then, yeah, and then you're just reinforcing those systems in a way that will, like, be passed on as well because people just think that that's how the world works.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's basically about women having to live and adapt to a man's world.
Yeah.
But Barkey, in her article, she mainly focuses on sexual objectification. Like, similar to what you're saying in terms of internalizing it yourself, she talks about the ways that we adhere to male beauty standards, basically, and like the way that we've bought into this beauty myth by like putting makeup on and stuff because we believe that in order to be more beautiful in society we have to do that.
Yeah,
which is obviously a completely a social construct. This is very like of the time that she was writing. Like, again, she was writing in the 70s and 80s when I think like anti-porn and like sex was the kind of the main mission right. of feminism. She focuses mostly on sexual objectification, which obviously still rings true today, but her definition has evolved mm-hmm. a bit, and now we call it internalized misogyny more than, you know, psychological oppression, but it is psychological oppression. So I read this study from 2009 where these researchers observed conversations between 45 pairs of female friends, and like their reason for doing this is because they believe that people are more likely to compare themselves within their own in-groups rather than with privileged out-groups. So like we're more likely to compete with people who are only slightly more advantaged than us.
Okay, right.
So like if you're wondering about an example, like the threat I feel whenever a girl who looks slightly like me walks into a room, I don't feel a lot of competition with other women very often, but when a girl has like dark hair and olive skin and is like lanky, oh my god, the threat.
It's really Maya has such a complex about it.
And it's like, I'm aware of it and it's irrational.
But, hey, look, my fellow small beans, I don't feel quite as threatened by like tall women or anything because I'm like, we're just different. But when I see another small bean, I definitely get like way more insecure.
Hannah and I are like two completely different types if we're going to be misogynistic and typify ourselves. But like we never feel.
And I don't self-identify as a small bean, but if I have to categorize myself as something.
How limiting. Yeah, I think that was such an apt definition. Like, the way that competition works is you're competing with people who you feel like are going to usurp you, almost.
Yeah, well, even in Lizzie McGuire, Lizzie is like a pretty blonde girl with fun clothes, and Kate is just a slightly taller, also blonde girl with nice clothes.
I like that you didn't say fun clothes.
Well, they're not as fun, but I'm like sure that they're nice.
So the study gives a pretty good updated explanation of how this form of misogyny plays out. So they say, competition between women is often competition for ostensibly limited resources, such as favored social positions, desired male partners, regard, worth, and other forms of social capital. Such competition may take the forms of malicious gossip, social exclusion, zero-sum comparisons with other women, and women putting one another down or maneuvering each other into lower status positions in an attempt to make themselves look or feel better. And I think that's very in line with the way that we use pick me today. Mm-hmm. Would you say so?
Yeah.
I don't think that there is a woman out there who would hear that and not feel like they've experienced that with other women to one degree or another. Like, there, of course, is a lot of competition.
I mean, I also think it's like, even if it's not a conscious decision you're making, we are just taught to feel like there's almost like a scarcity amongst men.
I mean, there probably is.
Yeah. We do feel incredibly competitive with each other, and like the patriarchy benefits from us constantly trying to one-up each other, like who's the prettiest, who's the this, who's the that, because we're so focused on that, and we're so focused on that in pursuit of, you know, male attention that we're not actually doing other things.
I know, we really do be thinking about
all the time, which is like, I'm not
sorry,
saying
this is a very heterosexual take. Yes. Again, this is like very much about heterosexuality, like it, of course this doesn't apply.
I'm not saying that, like, we shouldn't be focusing so much on guys. It's natural, like...
Of course.
Like, I just think that the systems really benefit from us spending our time and money, like, so much of it on the pursuit of male attention or validation, really.
Totally. I think the key problem, though, is that we haven't really figured out what the pursuit of male attention looks like. Because have you seen the TikToks about pick-me's, Hannah?
No, show me.
Okay, I'm going to show Hannah some. We'll be back in a sec. What's your read of those?
Well, they were all like very different. All the ones we watched, the girl that was the supposed pick me was very different from each other one. Like they're,
I know.
And they were all had these really specific things about them that I was like, Is this like a universally understood trait? Because I don't really understand. This first one you showed me, I was like, I don't know what this is.
You want to describe what it was?
It was like this girl and she had like 5 scrunchies on each hand and she was like flipping her hair around and she was like, oh no, we have to take a test. Oh no. And then she had a strawberry. She's like, I got my pink little drink. And it was like POV up. Pick me girl class.
And then she was trying to steal this guy's glasses.
Glasses, but I was like, this just sounds like a girl that would be in your like grade 8 class. I don't know.
It doesn't really sound like a person at all, to be honest. Like, I was like, what are you embodying? I think she was literally like 14.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know.
But the video has like 700,000 likes. Like it's clearly resonating with someone.
With someone, I don't know. It just sounds like a pick me has become a stand-in for like a girl you don't like. And so when you describe a pick me, you can be really specific because it feels like you're specifically talking about a girl you don't like.
Well, a lot of them are like, this is a girl who I had to sit next to in class. A lot of them are by high schoolers, which I think is interesting, which is very different than what Black Twitter was talking about, which is like, these are fully grown women who they're kind of satirizing.
Well, the woman that they describe, that they were describing on Black Twitter is like a very specific but like universal archetype of a woman, because there are women who are like that.
Yeah.
It's not like they're just making fun of this one girl they don't like. It's like a pattern of a type of behavior from some women that is like annoying to experience as another woman.
I feel like they're satirizing her, but it's also like they kind of pity her because they're like, the way that they're embodying her voice is in a way that makes her look like she's really disadvantaging herself, which is a sad thing.
Yeah, but it's like a specific type of woman. That's like an archetype. That's why it was a trend where multiple people could write from this POV and they would all kind of align with each other.
Yeah.
Whereas, I don't know, these TikToks, again, it's like, I think there's a girl, Samantha, in your class that you don't like. And now you're making fun of her.
So there was like, I think 3 or 4 that we looked at. The first was that one. The second was a girl who basically is embodying a pick me who goes up to you in class and is like, wow, you're wearing so much makeup. Like, how long does that take you to do? And like making fun of how orange she looks and stuff. And then the last one was very strange. It's like a girl. She honestly seems pretty chill to me. Like, I was like, that girl.
She's like, I was in the hospital last night.
Okay, so this is, I'm noticing.
What?
Yeah, she's like, I was in the hospital, and it kind of sounds like she's making it up.
And then she's like, also, I'm a professional makeup artist, and I have to put my hair up. Don't look at me. And I was like, who is this?
She's like, Jason, don't look at me. And she's putting her hair up in a bun. She's like, it's probably going to look so ugly.
That first detail is so weird.
No. So this is actually a pattern. So I've extracted like a few patterns that are coming out of these videos.
It's officially 2026, and my New Year's resolution is to prioritize high-quality pieces in my wardrobe. Thanks to Quince, I can already check that off my list. I'm already planning outfits around my new cotton Oxford shirt. It's such a classic, timeless piece that I know I'll be rewearing all year. Need more than just a wardrobe update? Quince has tons of options for the home as well. Maya has had the same dinnerware since college and has finally decided it's time for a refresh, starting with a gorgeous set of ceramic cake plates. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Don't wait. Go to quince.com/rehash for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/rehash to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/rehash.
A lot of these videos like to make fun of girls, and this is someone, a trait of a pick me that they see.
Okay.
Is a girl who overemphasizes when she's been hurt or injured. So a lot of them make fun of girls who wear casts in school, like because they broke their legs, and kind of insinuate that she's either faking it or like really prolonging having to wear a cast to get like sympathy from guys, I guess.
Okay. So I do think that we are operating, I mean, obviously we just acknowledge that, with many different definitions of a pick me, but like that feels almost more aligned with the original pick me, in that it's a woman who's like emphasizing like her smallness and her weakness and like her inferiority. Or,
but these girls are talking about the smallness, like in each video they're like, duh, I'm so small.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's more aligned with like what Black Twitter was talking about. It's different, but it's like you're like diminishing yourself in some way, or emphasizing that. Whereas I think the idea of the pick me that you and I have talked about, and like that archetype that we grew up with, she's a guy's girl, where she'd be like, I hurt myself, I don't really care,
I don't give a fuck, why
like,
would I cry about
oh
that?
Am I bleeding? Whatever.
I'm just remembering that She's a Man moment where she gets hit in the crotch and she's like, huh? And then she goes, oh! She's pretending to be her brother. But I'm like, girl, if you've ever been hit in that region, you know it hurts. You know it hurts.
Like, these are just different things, which makes me think, what is actually a pick me?
So I've seen another video that has a caption that said, I actually really like beer. I prefer it over those fruity drinks. And then she's using the pick me, choose me, which to specify, the pick me, choose me sound that popularized this trend is from Grey's Anatomy. It's when Meredith is like pleading with Derek not to file for divorce. And she goes, pick me, choose me, love me. And it's
and
like,
she says it exactly like that.
She kind of does. Pompeo. I'm going to put it in here because it sounds pretty similar.
So pick me, choose me, love me.
It's very cringe, and so people found that and were like, this is gold, and they used it as a sound.
Yeah.
But she used that song over that caption about the beer and the fruity drinks, which is like, some women have preferences that we don't like that they have preferences.
Can I posit something? So if the version of the pick me from TikTok that we've been talking about kind of originates from this Grey's Anatomy sound, it sounds like there are two different pick me's with different origins, that it's not necessarily like this is an evolution of pick me as it was used on Black Twitter. They came from two different places.
Kind of, yeah.
If that makes sense. And I'm sure they emerged along the way, because if it was popular on Black Twitter, I'm sure it made its way also into like mainstream online spaces.
They're kind of evolving differently because, yeah, the pick me, choose me song, like that, the pick me, choose me sound is from an old piece of media. And like, you know, this has been talked about in other spheres of the internet.
Also, it just sounds like a lot of women immediately hear like the idea of like a woman who's saying pick me and we can all picture something. So it just feels like also, yeah, it makes sense that it took off from two different places and like would resonate with so many people.
Yeah, exactly. Well, because there are types of girls that all women don't like. truly. Another one just to kind of finish off the trends, but like they really don't like girls who don't wear a lot of makeup. And sometimes it's like they get mad about girls, like I said with that one video, who put down other girls for wearing too much makeup.
Yeah.
Sometimes there are videos that are literally just, I actually prefer just to wear mascara, and they're like, what a pick me. Now we don't like girls who just wear mascara. Like, now that makes you a pick me.
You're getting mad at them because you think that they're trying to appeal to men by not doing the thing that they think appeals to men. They're being like, oh, I'm not actively like seeking male validation by wearing a lot of makeup, and therefore I must be seeking male validation for
because I'm not wearing makeup. Yeah, I just feel like it's very gender essentializing in a weird way. Like the Cosmo article, you know, it brings up Taylor Swift and Starbucks as being these like feminine things that pick-me's are going to put down. But like, neither of those things is inherent to womanhood. They're very much just like signifiers of womanhood that are very much ingrained in like capitalistic ideology. Same with makeup, right? And same with certain types of fashion. Like, that's still stuff that you're going out and buying to kind of perform an identity of, you know, femininity and womanhood.
And I think we are doing this thing right now where we're becoming less harsh on women who perform femininity, because, you know, it's always been this trap where you lose if you don't and you lose if you do, right? Yeah. And so now we're like, oh my God, Christian Girl Autumn, I actually love that, which is, you know, Starbucks and Taylor Swift to me is Christian Girl Autumn shit.
Yeah.
And we're like, I love these basic girls. And now we hate girls that aren't basic. But it's like, honestly, everybody is performing gender to some degree.
I think it's funny too, because I was going through the r/not like other girls subreddit. And a lot of them were talking about like, yeah, the way I was talking about earlier, right, with these movies where these overly feminine girls have been villainized, and they were like, why don't we get like a villain who reads a lot of books and like a protagonist, kind of like Legally Blonde, like a protagonist who is overly feminine. Oh, and they're like, why can't a protagonist be a popular girl? And it's like, now we're going the opposite direction where we're like, all popular girls and all girls who dress like this and all girls who are like this are actually all really nice. It feels like under this criticism, women have to uphold like XYZ signifiers of femininity in order to be able to fit in with like the clique of women now. Mm-hmm. Like, saying that you prefer less feminine things automatically makes you like a traitor to your kind. But like, what are feminine and masculine signifiers? Like, aren't we trying to dismantle essential gender identity to one degree or another?
Well, I mean, some of us are, but I would say like in the mainstream general population isn't actually trying to, right? And
yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like I've had trouble fitting in with girls because I was too feminine. And I've also had trouble fitting in with girls because I didn't feel feminine enough. Because you grew up with this conditioning of like, this is feminine and this isn't or whatever. And like, if you've adhered to that, like all your life, And this is always comes up in the makeup debate, where like some of these things you actually just like.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely think that there is a certain level of conditioning that makes me feel like I need to, you know, put mascara on every morning. But in my daily life, sorry, sue me, I only wear mascara for the most part. But I also think, you know, I'm fully aware of the fact that like my interest in makeup came from people telling me I should be interested in makeup.
In terms of when we talk about like gender essentialism and these kind of signifiers of femininity, and like you're in the clique if you wear them and you buy them and you're in the clique if you're not, I just feel like there's something strangely capitalistic about labeling women who don't participate in the trends of femininity as being anti-feminist. That seems kind of post-feminist to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in the backlash against older waves of feminism, we've come to embrace these like very hyper-commodified forms of femininity. And then this turn against pick-me's has kind of consolidated that idea. So like the pick-me who's like rejecting these signifiers of femininity is labeled as psychologically oppressed, when like older waves of feminism would probably say that women who are buying into those types of femininity are the ones who are psychologically oppressed, which yeah. I think is so interesting.
Well, of course, because older waves of feminism was all about like trying to encourage women to break out of those thinking patterns, right? Like that's why books like The Feminine Mystique like blew up, because women were reading them and going, oh shit, like maybe this is me. Or even like thinking about The Beauty Myth, which I read that book and I was like, oh shit,
you're like, ah, oh, damn, she's me for
which
real.
I guess that came out in like the 90s, so it's not really the same, but I would agree. I would say we're kind of doubling down, because you know, maybe not all of us want to feel like in order to be a good feminist we have to not wear makeup and dress plainly, whatever, because I actually don't think that that is necessarily a genuine expression of everybody's personalities either, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that we have a right to express ourselves however we want, but I think we've, now that we're all so familiarized with feminist language, we've figured out ways to justify it under some ideology. And yeah. when it's like, you can have that ideology and dress however you want and not really connect the two.
Well, it kind of does make me think in the more collective sense, because I do think everyone individually should be able to do what they want and wear what they want. Like, I don't think we should all have this debate about whether or not I'm culturally conditioned and whether or not this is something they actually like. But it does make me wonder if the project of psychological oppression has actually worked, that now, whatever, 50 years out from when Barkey wrote that, there are like huge groups of women basically calling other women psychologically oppressed because they don't buy into the things that have been sold to us as liberation, like these products and the, like makeup, for example. You know what I mean? Think if Barkey was looking at us now, she passed away a few years ago, but like if she was looking at this now, she'd be like,
Well, it goes into what we've talked about in other episodes about like the way that capitalism and feminism have become so intertwined, especially how you express your version of feminism.
It's choice feminism.
Yeah, right. But I think whenever feminism gets out of popularity, but you still have people who are true feminists and maybe like more radical movements are starting up, but it's more underground, that's where you have these women who are like actually consciously rethinking how they participate in other systems that prop up gender oppression. So women who are like actively not participating in like capitalism. I think it was a really, really big moment for me in high school when I stopped wearing a bra, grew my armpit hair out. And I know that now it's like those are just signifiers of like this stereotype of a feminist, but actually it really helped me to do something that felt extreme to me in my physical expression, to kind of feel more comfortable speaking out about those values. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I just don't like that now we have this big collective eye roll against having armpit hair and having like, you know, women who aren't adhering to beauty standards. And you know, and now that we're in this wave of bimbification, which we're going to talk about in another episode, I just wonder what Barkey would think of it, because it's like, I really do think we've kind of bought into this project of psychological oppression, that now we're like, yes, you're right, I should wear makeup and that will make me more of a feminist. Like, it's just strange.
You really can't win. Like, you participate in one, you participate in the other, you can't really fucking win.
You can't win.
Going back to this idea of like gender essentialism, I don't think that all men are operating from the same mindset. Everybody has their taste. Everybody is attracted to different qualities in different people. And it is insane to like actually channel your actions through this idea of like attracting a mate. Everybody is different, and like love doesn't actually work that way.
I also just don't think that you can actually separate, completely extract yourself from your cultural conditioning. Everyone grows up in a culture. Everyone grows up in an environment. Unfortunately, we grew up in capitalist man culture, and like there is no way we are going to be able to completely extract ourselves from that ever, unless we like go move into the woods in the middle of nowhere somewhere that isn't on this continent. You know, like there's always going to be a part of you where you're like, is this my cultural conditioning, or is this something I actually like? And if we had to debate that with ourselves all the time, we would lose our minds. So it's like, you kind of just have to accept that of course parts of the things you like are because you've been conditioned to like them, but that's like any environment that you live in, basically.
Well, I mean, we're all products of our environment, and I think, you know, if you're draining your bank account buying like new makeup products all the time, I'm not judging you, but like maybe that's a more like serious detrimental version of,
well, like, that just sounds like a shopping addiction,
right?
I also feel like, so Hariri Kia, who I quoted earlier from the Cosmo article, makes a distinction. She says, while not all women who prefer to wear a jersey over a sundress fall under the pick-me-girl category, the concept comes from the idea that these women want to be chosen by the men they surround themselves with badly. They either consciously or subconsciously adapt their personalities to appeal to the male gaze. She isn't just someone with traditionally masculine likes and dislikes. She's someone whose intentions are to center men in her decision-making process. But I feel like a lot of the TikToks that we're watching are just girls and women making fun of other women for, like, flirting with men. Like, a lot of the times they're, like, you know, taking their hats and, like, wearing their hats and taking their glasses. Yeah. Or, like...
Which is also, that's how you flirt when you're
14. Sometimes you flirt, yeah, if you're a kid.
Like...
I just feel like you aren't seeing the putting other women down part in, like, half of the videos that we're watching. You're just seeing people making fun of, like, a type of girl. And that's why it was confusing, because it's, like... We don't know what the type of girl is, but they all seem to have decided on who she is. And it just seems to be girls that they don't like you said.
Well, because the pick me is something that we've somehow associated with some kind of like feminism, because they're being accused of internalized misogyny, it gives us an excuse to make fun of women that we don't like and their behaviors, but like by justifying it through some kind of feminist lens.
And at the end of the day, like, who's more misogynistic? Truly, because if you're looking at that subreddit, which none of you will, because why would you? All the comments are so like vicious. They're very vicious, talking about, you know, the different posts of women that come up who are like, whatever, not like other girls.
Yeah.
The comments are way meaner than what the initial posters, like what the initial not like other girls women are saying. So this is going to bring me to this topic. There are certain women on reality TV shows who have been like widely hated on the internet for being pick-me's. Hannah, do you want to tell us a little bit about Camille Grammer?
Oh my God. I mean, okay.
Oh, she's from Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, yes. By the way.
So Camille Grammer was married to actor Kelsey Grammer. And on the show, she has this wonderfully like monotone like voice.
I'm obsessed.
Maya loves her. She's this very wealthy, you know, beautiful lady who, she's very feminine, but she really has like depicted herself as like, I just don't really like the company of other women. I just really like to be around men because women are so much drama. Meanwhile, she is on a reality show that is about women hanging out and having drama.
Yeah, exactly. She, in the first season, they go on this trip to Las Vegas, and it's supposed to be a bonding trip because like none of the housewives know each other yet, which I think is fascinating all on its own. But the other women notice that she's not really hanging out with them a lot, and she's hanging out with their husbands, because this is one of those rare times where all the husbands are on the trip as well.
And I hate when the husbands are around.
Oh, this particular time I find so fascinating. But except usually Kelsey. No. Usually they're useless. Except, yeah, Kelsey's not there. Camille's husband, which is kind of also a huge thing. But yeah, she does verbatim say that women are too much drama. And then she also goes on to be like, and I like sports. Another one is Lucy on Love Island.
Oh, yeah.
From season 5.
Lucy is like one of those people you just see and you're like, God, you are so beautiful.
She's so beautiful. So,
and immediately women are like.
So on the show, in one scene, she gets surrounded by the other girls, Anna, Amber, and Yawande. They confront her basically about the fact that she doesn't hang out with them enough. And she tells them that she doesn't relate to other girls very well. And she starts crying. And then she says in her confessional that girls are, again, too much drama. Like, it's very verbatim.
Mm-hmm.
Both of these women are very much vilified by fans for this, especially because like both of them do tend to overstep boundaries with like other women's partners. On Love Island, I'm giving Lucy way more of a pass because that is the entire point of the show. But with Housewives, like Camille very much oversteps other women's husbands. Like at one point she's like fake grinding on one of them. It's very inappropriate.
Like, I guess, but like more recently, like Dorit's husband just talked about how he wanted to like have sex with Erica Jane.
Well, that's not okay either.
Okay. I'm just saying.
I wouldn't say.
And Erica Jane was like, I'm not wearing underwear. And like,
he's just fully staring at the punsy.
Yeah.
the punsy. I'm not going to sit here and like defend Lucy and Camille because they're both very whack in their own special ways. Like Lucy's an anti-vaxxer. I'm pretty sure she said some racist things as well. Like, she's not great.
But in the context of the show, when you're watching the show as a viewer removed from outside context, I do think that like it's unfair the way that the girls kind of go to her.
Well, yeah, the women on the show criticizing Lucy and Camille for not hanging out with them are very unfriendly and conniving. Like,
yeah.
Do you remember Anna from Love Island? Like,
oh yeah,
her
and
vibes.
Even like Amber has a great redemption arc that season, and by the end you're rooting for Amber, but she was a mean girl when the season started.
Well, and so the three of them, so like Anna especially and Amber, but especially Anna, like really touts herself as a girl's girl, and like that's great and all. She's loyal to the people she's friends with. She's horrible to other women on the show. She's horrible to the men. Like, she's very vicious. Same as on Real Housewives, Kyle and like Lisa Vanderpump, who are the women who are kind of talking shit about Camille. It's like Kyle is one of the most lecherous people on that show. Oh my god, I actually can't.
Well, I just watched
worse things.
I was
about
watching season two, and they were just laughing with their husbands about how this like woman who came on was chubby.
Like, yeah, Kyle's awful, and Kyle touts herself again as a girl's girl, and it's like you're horrible to other women. So the fact that she's like annoyed that Camille is a guy's girl is like, well, you're not much better. You just surround yourself with women more, which gives you more of a chance to be terrible to them, to be honest.
Yeah, and I will say, like, I have been a guy's girl in my life, and I actually do miss, like, having a lot of male friendships because I don't as much anymore. But, like, I have definitely been, like, the girl in the group in my lifetime. And same. I've also had troubles with my, you know, friendships with other women because of my closeness with men that they are dating. It is a mucky situation. I definitely don't think that I've always been like the most considerate to their feelings in those situations. But at the same time, it is really hard to want to have like a close friendship with someone. And just because of your genders, suddenly people are casting a suspicious eye on you because I genuinely just like having male friends. But then I've also definitely operated from this place of like girls are too much drama. Because in my lifetime, girls have caused me a lot more drama than men have.
The people who have most severely bullied me in my life are my closest female friends. Have been throughout my entire life. I've had so many instances of being treated horrendously by the people closest to me who were women. So yeah, sometimes anecdotally, you are going to have trouble being friends with girls.
And it's, I mean, I've really tried to like reshape my mindset about my relationships with other women. And I don't go into it with such a defensive attitude
and
as
you
used to.
You have mostly female friends now, like truly.
Yeah, it's
I've
true.
Always mostly had female friends,
but like I did always find comfort in men when I had trouble getting along with other women, because I've actually have always had trouble getting along with other women.
Well, you just got bullied also.
I got bullied, but I also just I learned how to socialize with other kids in the company of like my brothers. And also just because of my like past experiences with girls, like I'm more easily intimidated by other women. I'm not intimidated by a bunch of men. I feel like much more comfortable and at ease. And that is something that, again, that I've been trying to like retrain my brain about.
There are times in my life where I have been friends with mostly men. And like for me personally, when I see like another woman kind of enter that group or be in a space where it's like there aren't enough of us, like I really go out of my way to make her feel comfortable and like make sure that we're kind of bonding. Because I want to kind of extend that olive branch. Like, I know what that looks like when you're one of the only girls in a friend group of guys. And so, like, I try to do that. I personally don't feel very intimidated by other women in those types of spaces, mainly because I know that every woman's intimidated by every other woman. Like, it just feels like we all are kind of intimidated. Sure. So I know that no one's actually thinking poorly of me. But I do really feel like this kind of pick me thing, right? Because like Camille and Lucy were so much more hated than Kyle and Anna were. I think Amber got hate for other reasons and also for racist reasons, so like
for sure
I'm not gonna include her in that. But Anna didn't get the level of criticism that Lucy has gotten, and of course Lucy's gotten extra criticism after the show because of all the stupid shit she said in public, and she sucks. But like, it feels like the girl's girl really gets more of a pass in today's culture, which is interesting. Like, it's just kind of done like a loop now. Sure. But I feel like it plays into this kind of blanket exceptionalism that we've instilled within feminism. Like, never speak poorly of another woman. Always be friends with other women. But, like, if the other women you know are mean and you don't enjoy being friends with them, anecdotally, what are you supposed to do? Well,
I think that's why people are so drawn to the pick me, because it lets them be mean about other women. But again, they're justifying it with some like pseudo feminist language.
Yeah.
Where they're like, well, it's actually because she is like causing like internalized misogyny, blah, blah, blah. Where it's like, maybe this woman actually just has her own complicated relationship with womanhood, with her relationships with other women, with gender performance, with all of that stuff. And it's separate from you and it doesn't have to do with you. And you can just like let her be. If you don't like her, you don't have to like her, but don't act like it's because of some kind of feminist reason.
I do feel like there are two tensions with the concept of a pick me. There's a tension between the empirical experience, like the anecdotal experience for many women of having bad female friendships growing up and not trusting other women. And then there's a tension between that and like this ideological push against internalized misogyny, mm-hmm. like the individual and the collective kind of. And then there's a tension between psychological oppression in like the earlier sense, like I was just talking about, and the way we kind of perceive psychological oppression today. And that just makes me think that the term isn't really servicing anyone. What do you think we should do about the word pick me? Do you think it has any use to us anymore?
No, because I really don't think it means anything anymore. If anybody can apply it to describe any kind of woman that they feel is like their opposite and the girl that is different from them and they don't like for whatever reason, then it really, again, is just a word that's used to be a bitch to other women. And no, I don't really think that it's helpful in the greater project of dismantling patriarchy to like be fighting with each other about how they're choosing to express themselves as a woman and like how they're choosing to display themselves as a feminist, I think is counterintuitive.
I think making things that annoy you the mission of your activism might be a bit of a misguided way to approach activism.
It's also, if we're so caught up, like, I think aesthetics matter to some degree, but if we're so caught up in aesthetics that we're not really talking about the things that the aesthetics are meant to represent, then it's like we are doing something wrong.
Yeah, maybe we should just all think a little harder. Give it a big
think. No, don't tell women to read because TikTok will get mad at you.
Girls, don't read.
Or do.
Rehash is hosted by Hannah Rain and me, Maia. It's produced and edited by me, and the intro and outro song is produced by our talented friend, Ian Mills. Thanks for listening.